and like it.
KVU Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KVU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KVU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meetings in writing, please email Monica at kbu.org.
Hello, this is Tave. Art Focus is coming up next, and this program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland 5, presenting an evening with Spanish classical guitarist Pablo Sanviegas. Born and raised in La Rioja, Spain, Pablo Viegas performs compositions that echo his homeland's musical heritage, January 20th at the Newmark Theater in Portland. Tickets and information are available at portland5.com.
The music playing is Higher Plane by Danny Skrilla from Portland's own label Zam Zam Sounds. Thank you for joining us once again. This is Andre Middleton, your host of KBOO's Art Focus. Today my guest is Daniela Ross. We're going to be talking about the Ann Cooper Albright Workshop, Training a Political Body, Responsiveness, Resistance, and Resilience. But first up, some local art news. Fertile Ground Festival 2017 is an 11-day festival that features world premiere projects, stage readings, developing works, and a myriad of other art events from the Portland creative community. This citywide festival is focused on new work in the arts, from fully staged world premieres, workshops and readings of theater, to ensemble and collaborative-driven work, dance, comedy, and film. This festival spans a spectrum of creative endeavor and seeds the next generation of creation through artist conversations, workshops, lunchtime readings, and much, much more. Happening here in Portland from January 19th through the 29th, please visit www.fertilegroundpdx.org to learn more. The 27th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films is happening February 5th through March 4th. The Cascade Festival of African Films shows us Africa through the lens of Africans rather than the vision of Africa packaged for Western viewers. The films celebrate Africa's achievements, expose its failures, and reveal possibilities of a hopeful future. Although the films cannot represent an entire continent, we hope to encourage American viewers to become interested in and study African cultures. This festival is free and open to the public. Please visit www.africanfilmfestival.org to learn more. And since we're talking about films, I got to give a plug to three amazing films that shine a light on the lives of African Americans: Moonlight, Fences, and Hidden Figures. These films humanize Black folk and show how complex and fully realized representations of Black and other people of color can be the core of great storytelling. We have to get out there and tell our stories, y'all, because it's been a long time coming. Danielle Ross is a Portland-based choreographer and performer, where she co-curates the poetry dance video series Pure Surface, is on the board of the Kurasic Music Guild, and is a founding member of Front, a newspaper dedicated to contemporary dance. She most recently created her solo, It's Like This Out There, It's Like This In Here, which has been performed in Los Angeles, Lincoln, Nebraska, and Minneapolis, and which is always in progress. I heard that. In 2017, she will begin working on a new ensemble work, Apparatus, and will continue working with choreographer Linda Austin on her latest project, A World, A World. Ross's work has been supported by the Precipice Fund, which is PICA, the Regional Arts and Culture Council, which some people call RAC, and the Oregon Arts Commission via a residency at Studio 2 in Portland. Danielle, thank you for coming on Art Focus.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. So before we get started, please share a bit about your background and how you discovered your need to have movement be a large facet of your practice.
Yeah, I mean, when I first started thinking about art, I didn't think I knew what dance was. You know, I thought it felt precious to me. I wasn't sure if I was attracted to it. And then I took this class where one of our assignments was actually to go on public transit and to watch how people were performing for each other. And it was the first time that I had really thought about performance as, you know, within constructs of society and within this idea of performing identity. And I think that was kind of life-changing because that started to get at some things that I'm interested in just outside of virtuosity and movement as I had really thought about it in the past. So I think it hit up against some of my, you know, values as an activist and the ways that I was thinking about the world and how people perform for each other. So that's really what started it. And then that was in the Bay Area. And then I moved back to Portland. I'm from here. And was really looking for a community and a place where I could find more spaces to create. And, you know, I think we're all feeling the rub of that as Portland changes. But at the time, that was like a big attractor for me from the Bay. So I moved back and got to know a lot of people that are, you know, fierce in this community and fierce as makers. And the rest is history.
Nice. So what experiences has shaped and informed your work? You know, I know that obviously social justice is a big part of it. And that's actually how we met. It was down, I want to say, at the United Way.
When,
like, we were talking with a guy named Donald Braden and Hoshiman Brown. So actually, I met you through social justice and learned about your art. What are the factors that have contributed to what you do?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think, you know, living in this world. I think I think I've never thought of activism and art as entirely separate. I'm interested in art as activism. I'm interested in activism as art. I'm interested in kind of these intersections of things. But I think, you know, when I think about performing and moving bodies, I think about empathy a lot, right? Like, people say performance moves them. I hear that all the time. And I find it interesting that we can watch a body performing and moving on stage, that we can say that we're moved by something, and there's something about empathy in there. And I think in the world around us, when we're seeing violence against marginalized people, or we're seeing, you know, oppression in some way, like, we're seeing bodies be manipulated in some way. And so there's something there about kind of this crossover between watching performance and what we're viewing, you know, in this country, in this world.
Great. So you just got back from Nebraska middle of last year. Mm-hmm. What brought you out there, of all places?
Our dear friend, Rosanna Ibarra. Who is getting her MFA there. She invited me out there to perform that solo when it was in progress. It's always in progress. I don't know what's going to become of it, or, you know, it feels like this very long project that I probably will just keep manipulating, keep playing with. But That project started from an experience of watching my last bigger work, Togetherness, from the audience on opening night and feeling like I didn't recognize it. And it kind of got me in the space of thinking about, you know, how we as makers have our own practice of our own kind of feedback loop, where we're like constantly giving ourselves information, taking that information, spitting it out in some way. And what does that mean? And so I like this idea of having a project that I have no beginning and end for, that I have no set kind of rigid timeline for, that it's almost like its own little machine that's working alongside of other projects that I'm working on as a way to express some of the observations that I have about my own work. So I took that to Nebraska.
So has anyone seated here in Portland?
I've performed some works in progress of it. I mean, it's always in progress. So I guess I've performed some instances of it at the Creative Music Guild Festival last June. There was like a small showing at the Waypost a couple years ago. And no plans yet, but potentially.
You'll keep us posted?
Yeah.
Good.
Definitely.
So one of the reasons why you're here today is because I saw you post in a very excited, all caps font, the coming of the Ann Cooper Albright workshop that you're having here. I want to say it's on January 21st.
Mm-hmm. January 21st, 1 to 4 p.m. at Flock Dance in Kenton.
And being that we go back a ways, I said, you know, I want to make sure that I use my platform to share this information, because excited about something, I'm excited about something. Tell us more about this and why you decided to invest some energy into this.
Yeah, so I am excited about it. So thank you. I'm so happy to be here talking about it. Ann Cooper Albright is one of the most, I find, influential people out there in the world today, and she's influenced me a lot. And she's everything. She's an activist. She's an artist. She's a scholar. She's a mom. She's she's the president of a lot of things. She's the professor and chair of dance at Oberlin College. She's been, I think, a fierce model for me in the world of how to navigate a lot of different hats, and how, especially within, you know, institutional settings, right? Like within higher education, within art institutions, I feel like she's someone I've had my eye on since I found out about her, because there's such a fierceness, there's such an authenticity in how she moves through her different roles. And she's an activist. And I think to maintain, you know, your presence as an activist and your presence as an artist, and to have a true sense of what that means to you, I sense from her that that's constantly shifting, and I have a lot of respect for the work she's done. So she's coming, and we, you know, I met her years ago through Front, which is a publication that we have here in Portland dedicated to performance. And we met her to talk about, you know, other things. And as soon as I met her, I was like, this woman is amazing. This woman is inspiring. This woman has a voice and is definitely an activist. And she, you know, we stayed in touch. And then over the last course of the year, I was just like, Ann, we got to get you back to Portland. We got to get you back out here. And she's actually coming, thanks to Reed College. So shout out to Reed for bringing her here and funding that. It just happened that we were able to get, you know, some time to do a workshop with her while she's here working with Reed students. So she'll be here.
Great. And one of the things I love about that, Reed has been a great resource for local arts, but I really like the fact that they're cool with say, hey, you know, we want Ann to be accessible to a broader audience.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't go to Reed or can't afford Reed. So I think it's an awesome thing. So tell us, what do you plan on? Do you have any role in the workshop? Besides organizing, are you going to be up there too, sharing your wisdom, sharing your wealth of knowledge?
I'm going to be a participant, and I am excited about that. I am going to do like a little Q&A session with Ann afterwards, and I think I know a lot of friends will be at the Women's March in D.C. Mm-hmm. So there's also an opportunity if people have things they want to ask Ann or just prompts that they feel like would be helpful for the conversation, you can email that to me, and I will be recording that Q&A with her.
Okay.
And posting it.
So I don't know if you want to put your email out there, but how shall people email you?
Yeah, I'll put it. Let's just put it out there. So it's daniyellross@gmail.com. You can email me.
Great, right. And we'll actually end up adding that for a limited time to it on our website.
Awesome.
So people can do that as well. So what should people expect from this workshop?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. Well, so it's talking about training a political body, you know, and I've taken workshops with Anne before. I think a lot of her background, I should just say, you know, she has a lot of, she's done work in like body mind centering. She's done a lot of contact improvisation work. She's done a lot of somatics and technique. This, she and I were actually talking about, you know, what should the content of this be? She asked me directly, what do you want to get out of this workshop for your community? And we ended up getting into a dialogue about just the political landscape right now, although that's been a landscape for a long time, I think, you know, and how do we as movers, as artists who have practices around embodiment, how do we use that as a tool in this landscape? And I think there's going to be a lot of talk about how do you balance expressive need, you know, and things like anger and things like, you know, intense emotion in a way that feels effective, whatever that means. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of exercises and work around that.
It's interesting you put it that way because not that I want to plug a show on Netflix, but there's a show that uses movement as a way of harnessing energy and channeling energy. And it occurred to me while I was watching that, that when you think about a lot of first world nations, how movement and dance was just as meaningful a meaning way of communication as voice and as the moving as image. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously before the printing press, before we commodified language, we used our bodies to communicate how we were feeling,
yeah.
How to tell stories, how to pass down wisdom. So it seems like a appropriate and needed callback to a time or to a sense of how do we communicate something in a pure sense that people can read and understand no matter what language they speak.
Yeah, it makes me think about, again, empathy. Like there is something about the body that seems to trigger that, or there seems to be so much potential in a body to be able to express and trigger empathy. And I think that's so... That to me is really important right now, and knowing that I'm working in a form of art that I have access to my body, I have access, you know, I'm able-bodied, I have access to be able to perform, like, so it almost feels counterproductive to not use that.
Right. So let's talk a little about your practice. What have you got going on in Portland? And on top of this, because obviously the workshop that Anne's putting on was, I'm assuming, is relatively sudden. I mean, I don't know how long it's been in the works.
Yeah, we started. I mean, Anne and I have been talking about getting her back here. So she was here in, oh gosh, she was here in 2000, I don't remember, a couple years ago.
Okay.
And after that, you know, we had breakfast the next day and I was like, you got to come back, you got to come back. And so we've been talking about that. Funding's always a challenge. So when she was able to come to read, she was like, I want to do a workshop.
Right,
so I think we've been organizing the workshop or, you know, talking about it since August.
Okay. So what about you? Outside of the workshop, obviously I'm sure it's taking up a lot of your time and energy right now, but what are you going to be working on the day after, on the 22nd of June, of January?
So right now, I mean, I just finished working with Linda Austin, who is one of my favorite humans here in this community and in the world. But she's doing her next production, which is called A World, A World, and that's starting up. We just finished a production called The Last Bell Rings for You, which is part of a series of work that Linda's been creating. And so A World is the final, as far as I know, the final chapter of that. So we'll start rehearsing for that in January, a week after the workshop. And then my own, I just received a RAC grant, which is really exciting, for a new project, thank you, called Apparatus. For now, it's called Apparatus. Everything always changes, right?
Right.
But I'm excited about this work. It's going to be an ensemble work, and it's, you know, it's with close friends that are also performers in this community. And I've been feeling the need to create with close, dear friends more recently and was thinking about why. And I'm really interested in seeing if we can kind of play with like the hierarchical structure that's often included within traditional dance settings, Western, mm-hmm. traditional Western dance settings, and seeing if we can kind of have a communal voice in figuring out content of a production instead of like what does directing really mean and right. How can we exchange information?
Well, since you mentioned that, it makes me think about, I'm not a dancer myself, but I do enjoy
dance.
You
got moves, though.
I'm glad this is radio, so you don't get to see any of them. it's an exciting time for dance right now. Mm-hmm. I think about, obviously I'm a big fan of Keon Gaskin, the work that he's been doing, and he's, you know, I think he's back in town now and he's doing some amazing stuff and he still travels here and there. But can you tell us, what do you think the state of dance is in Portland? Obviously we've got some real estate issues. Yeah. You know, we've got some issues in regard to finding spaces and finding community, but they're, you know, but like a plant, it seems like the roots are firm and the shoots are shooting off. What's your take on the state of dance in Portland right now?
I have no idea what's going to happen. It feels very tenuous. And it's almost funny saying that because I feel like it's always tenuous for artists, you know? It's always tenuous for activists. It's always tenuous for people that need space and funding and that don't have access often to it. Or that, you know, within society and within capitalism, that's not always the acknowledged way of surviving. And I think... So that always feels tenuous to me. But there is something very visceral in Portland right now about the changes that, you know, I have concerns around it. And at the same time, I feel like people that are making, you know, I'll talk about people in Portland right now, like my community specifically, which is it's a small subset of dance communities. There are others in Portland. But I think within my dance community, or how I would define that, I think there's such a grittiness, such a resourcefulness, such a resilience to, you know, finding what you need and asking the questions that you need to answer and being scrappy. And I do think that there are a lot of ways that Portland operates that is outside of kind of traditional economic means, you know. And I had a friend actually visit from L.A., last summer, and she was just saying that the thing that rubbed her the most, or that really struck her the most about Portland, was this kind of like DIY, I'm going to think about how exchange can happen for what I need in different ways, you know, and artist trades and all and that sort of thing obviously come to mind. But there are lots of ways that operate. So I hope that we continue to get real creative and at times loud about what needs to happen for arts to survive in this community.
Right. I've only been out there once, and that's bad on me. But I've been out to the space, the dance space out on like 75th and Foster, I think it is.
That's Performance Works Northwest. Performance Works, yeah, 67th. You know. Yeah.
And then you think about Suba's space. Mm-hmm. My God, New Expressive Workspace.
Yeah.
So, right, those two spaces embody, right, that DIY, hey, how do we take a space that has either been repurposed or reused or recycled, and how do we make something happen here, and then, you know, not only put the flag up and put the sign up, but start drawing energy so that it becomes a little more sustainable.
Yeah. Yeah. And the space where this workshop is, Flock, that's where I work out of. And same thing, you know, Artists Run Space by Tawny Holt. And there's a community of artists that are able to rent that. And there's a real commitment to keeping that space, you know, for artists working.
Right.
But I think all, you know, I know from personal interactions, like, and having these people as dear friends, that a lot of that continuation of keeping these spaces alive, like the amount of work that it takes, the amount of
energy,
support it takes, man, oh man, yeah, it takes a lot.
Right.
It takes a lot.
Well, it's funny, you know, I'm going to... I have to admit that one of my side projects is this thing called Friends of Noise. And
yes,
we're trying to open up an all-age venue art space in East County. And while I know that artists have often historically been accused of being the first wave of gentrifiers in spaces, I think there's something to be said for artists realizing that art is a medium that is often given and accepted relatively freely. And even though it does take resources to maintain this, most artists, they do the work because they need to do the work. Now, of course, they want to earn a living. They want to be able to eat and have a warm bed and have a roof over their head. But it's a very different type of economic development when, as opposed to, you know, putting in a movie theater or a strip mall, mm-hmm, or a factory. And I have to admit, personally, I'm looking forward to arts pushing out of the downtown core And on just a personal level, I think there are a lot of people out there, primarily marginalized, underserved people of color, who aren't coming downtown to see dance. They're not coming downtown to see movies. They're not coming downtown to see music. They're creating those spaces within their own community. And I think embracement of what they're doing and a sharing of what we're doing can only lead to good things.
Yeah, I think what you said too about accessibility, you know, accessibility takes kind of shifting, right? So that it's more accessible. And I think those shifts, it's like you have to kind of watch that shifting and make sure that it's happening in a way that that we agree with. And I think like opening it up an all in ages venue, like, yes, you know, we need that. And I'm excited about that. I also think there's something, speaking of Friends of Noise, I think there's something really powerful about performing arts. I think that, you know, there's something about like not being able to pin it down and it being ephemeral and ethereal and, you know, it's not an object per se. And I think there's something powerful about that, that conjures up experience, it conjures up community. Like there's a lot of ways that these forms of art can act within some goals around community.
Without a doubt. I'm going to put on another hat that I wear. being on the board of PICA, a big fan of their TBA festival, and I know that they, I don't want to say out of their way, because that doesn't sound like it was just such a huge lift, but I know that they reached out to young people of color through Portland Youth Builders. They're over on the east side, to say, hey, how do we get more young people involved in art so that not only will they become participants as far as creating the art, but that they can learn and experience the art that's being created. Mm-hmm. So I think you're actually right. The accessibility needs to be broad and needs to be wide, because that's the engine, that's the energy that keeps the engine going. You know, I mean, I think that the dominance of a white Eurocentric male dominated art scene, it's long overdue for some new blood, some new ideas and some new interpretations. Mm-hmm. And I think festivals like Fertile Ground, I think things like TBA are working towards how do we expand the landscape so that we get new genes into this art soup. And, you know, right now, don't get me wrong, I think the museum, the symphony, the ballet, I think they are all great institutions, yet and still the landscape is changing underneath their feet and they're not adapting as quickly as they could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, you know, we've got bodies.
Yes.
And when I think about trying to figure out how to empower, you know, what does that mean? Why do I, like, I happen to have access to space, you know, I happen to have privilege around that. And I think, like, this workshop will be, it's for everyone, you know, and Anne's explicit, we'll be dancing, we'll be singing, we'll be writing. So we'll be doing these things, but it's accessible for all body types, no training required.
Great. So wrap up, how can people register for the class? How do people give me some information about the class?
So you can email me at, I'm going to do it again, daniyellross@gmail.com. I hope I don't get some crazy emails. you can email me and I will make sure you have a reserved space. You can also just show up. So just drop in. It's $20 to $25 sliding scale. But if money's an issue, you can also let me know that. We'll take care of it. We'll figure
it
out.
Great. Well, thank you for coming on today's show. And as always, you're an amazing guest, an amazing friend.
Thank you so much, Andre.
And at some point, so first of all, everybody, if you missed any parts of today's show, you can find photos, links, as well as all the guest information on our show page. There will be a podcast of this show later today. You can find that at KBOO. Don't forget to check out this year's Fertile Ground Festival from January 19th through the 29th. The 27th Annual Cascade Film Festival of African Films from February 3rd to March 4th. And please check out the films Moonlight, Fences, and Hidden Figures. As always, it's my goal to meet and introduce the listeners of KBOO to a broad spectrum of regional artists. If you're a visual artist in any medium, I'd love to have you or your organization on our show. It's also my goal to share information relevant to artists. So when I learn of residencies, grant deadlines, call for artists, you'll hear about it on this show, as well as find it on our Facebook page or our KBOO Art Focus. We're going out to the sounds of Interstellar by DJ Mad from Portland label Zam Zam Sound. This is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. I'm your host, Andre. Take care and peace. We'll be right back.
Hello, coming up next at noon is Buscando America. The time is 11:58. I'm Tave. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Does your employer have a matching gifts program? Many companies offer dollar-for-dollar matching charitable contribution for donations you make to KBOO. The impact of your gift may be doubled or possibly tripled. Participating companies also make gifts made by retirees and or spouses. Matching gifts are a great way for you to maximize your membership dollars. Check with your company's human resources or accounting departments to find out if your employer matches charitable contributions. Then request a matching gift form. For more information on companies making matching gifts, go to kboo.fm/employer matching.
You're listening to KBOO Portland Community Radio. Yeah!
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of First 100 Days, United in Resistance. First 100 Days is a resource to support creative resistance to the Trump regime and takes place January 14th and 15th at the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art. There will be workshops on preparing for protests, interrupting oppression, creative protest tactics, and more, with the goal of strengthening our communities by channeling outrage into dynamic projects based on a deeper analysis of anti-colonial, anti-capitalist, anti-racist, and feminist histories. Again, that's First 100 Days, January 14th and 15th at the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art, 415 Southwest 10th Avenue, Suite 300 in Portland. More information on the event can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Inner Boy Workshop at the Portland Underground Grad School on Saturday, January 14th. Marking the first anniversary of David Bowie's death, they'll look at illuminating moments in his career for inspiration to break through creative blocks